love letters from Revelation 2 and 3. And what I mean by that is we're going to look at four churches that Jesus inspired John the Revelator to write about as he was exiled on the island of Patmos. What I thought was really interesting about Patmos is I do some research when I'm going to speak. And this is part of my personal devotional time right now as well, studying these churches. And so when I say it's not exhaustive, I mean it for real, okay? That's not like in some way to be like, oh, and then like present this big overview. I mean, it's not exhaustive. And so I usually say what I mean, and that's what it is. So what I'm saying to you is I'm on a journey really dissecting these churches, really looking at. And so as I did some study, it's a small Greek island in the Aegean Sea. It's 13 square miles. And currently, like, you can really do this. I didn't know they built a monastery there in about 1088 to recognize that that was the island that John was on. They have actually indicated the cave because of some artifacts and different things where they feel that most of that transpired. And it's a destination now where people, like when I Googled it, they were like, if you want to travel due to no airports, you should land here. And I'm like, how cool is that? I didn't realize. I'm sure John didn't at the time. That one day this would become a destination that mostly Christian people or people interested in history would go and visit and walk around that 13 square miles. He had no idea that would happen. Isn't that interesting? Doesn't that happen with our lives so many times? Sometimes when we look back, we're like, who would have thought, right? And John, I'm sure, as he was the last man standing, if you know what I mean by that phrase, he was the last disciple who had walked and lived and moved with Jesus, who was the lone survivor, last man standing, because the others had been executed and different things had happened to them due to their stance for the person of Jesus Christ. And I think most of us are aware of that, but I create common context because many times we have people visit and definitely online that view today and later in the week. And so I'd like to lay some groundwork. And while John was not interested in this destination, conversely, today others are, I want to travel there. I want to move in some ways where we look at the letters that John wrote in Revelation 2 and 3. In that desolate place, Jesus spoke to him specifically about seven churches. And you're going to see those churches coming up on the screen. And so Patmos would be almost where it says seven churches. It would be in that area. And so John was exiled there. These seven churches, you know, I thought, again, as I'm doing a personal study, like a devotional element on them, it was really interesting to me because I did this thing. There's more than seven churches at this time, okay? There's way more than seven. And I'm like, why these seven? Now, that's not definitively answered as I look at commentaries and I study and I look at people that have written about this. Why these seven? But something that created a common framework for me was this, that there was this thought pattern that these seven churches, which create, I know it's hard to tell on this map, but they created this oblong shape that really was utilized to almost like a mail route, okay? That there was used to disseminate information. There was a lot of trading going on, etc. And many scholars that I looked at, theologians, pastors, I went to all kinds of sources to say why these seven. Again, not definitive. But what I've kind of come up with for myself personally is because they represented typology. Do you know? We have types, right? We have types of, like if you're a girl, a woman of any age, you know they have body types, right? And they tell you these are the clothes you should wear. And if you're this shape, this shape. We know that we have typology. In the Word of God, there's typology. There are people that are the forerunners, typology of who Jesus will be in the Old Testament. So typology, root word. There are types. And some of these scholars, commentators, pastors that I listened to said these seven churches represent different types of churches. And as the letters came and then were disseminated, other churches would be able to relate because they would be like. You get what I'm saying? They would be that type of church. So that's one thought pattern. Another was simply the location. They're like, these were the primary trade routes in what it was called in ancient times, Asia Minor. Does anyone know? You can just raise your hand. We'll see. Does anyone know what country this is today? Modern day Turkey. Oh, you're so good. All right, modern day Turkey. So that's where these are located. But you'll hear in ancient times, this is called Asia Minor. And so as we look at these churches today, I am really focused on typology, location. That's about 300 miles, the oblong kind of courier route, if you will. And as I look at that, again, can't say definitively, but as I studied the churches, they are very different. There's a lot going on in each one. We're only going to cover four today. But as I think about the typology and I recognize the value of all different kinds of churches, I'm going to kind of put a pin in that. Now, most of you know I'm a former language arts teacher, so I love deconstructing stuff and then putting it back together. So everything I've just presented, put it over here, and we'll just put a pin in it, okay? If we were like really high tech, you've seen those movies, I think Tom Cruise is in some, where they bring up those boards and they're just doing this. Do you know what I'm talking about? I would so love to have one of those today, because I would have everything I just presented on this board and put it over here, and now put this electronic board up. And on that next slide, I'm going to go somewhere else now, and then I'm going to come back and bring what I just presented, and we're going to put them together. Are you with me? Oh, you guys are so good. You're like, yeah. And even if I'm not, I'm shaking my head. Okay, so here we go. Brad mentioned a couple Sundays ago, maybe it was last Sunday because life is moving so fast, okay, that we were in the UK recently. This is one of my pictures. Is that amazing? So that's Westminster Abbey. We were there with Convoy of Hope, and there were formalized meetings in the morning, and we, meaning, because I think you guys know, many of you, Brad sits on the Convoy of Hope board, that they are really endeavoring to move in some ways strategically to have a greater footprint in the UK, involve the churches there, and impact Europe. They're there, but they want to have a more solid footing, let's say, an expanded footprint. And so what would happen is, okay, I'm going somewhere, churches, right? Types of churches, typology, location, you got me? And so that's over there. I'm now in this bubble, so to speak, or screen. And as we were there in the UK in the morning, there were formalized meetings, presentations about Convoy of Hope. The people that were there, most of them had no idea. That's so cool. Because we're so like saturated with Convoy of Hope in the best ways, right? We know. And so many people that we were interacting with were not a part of what Convoy of Hope was doing. They were interested. We actually interacted. We'd like host a table in the morning at the breakfast. And then they had Convoy of Hope. Many of you that were here on Mother's Day, you heard me mention that they have soil scientists. I got to interact with one. He was there to talk about how food supply, right? Food insecurities really move into all these other places. So that's why Convoy is so vested there. And then presenting all the other elements that Convoy does. And as I was interacting with him, I said to him, I so used you. I didn't even really know you, but I used you on Mother's Day. And he's like, cool. It was so good. Just the connectivity. But as we sat at those breakfasts and we interacted with so many different people that were there to learn more about Convoy, we had each afternoon 3 to 4 hours to just go. And then we had informal meetings in the evening. That's cool, right? And so being a former language arts history teacher, and because Brad has done so much traveling recently, he said this to me, and he kept his word. He said, the afternoons are yours, because I know you're all about this. So wherever you want to go, I'll just put my tennis shoes on and we'll go. So one of those days looks like, I want to take a tour of Westminster. And it was just like 6 blocks from where we were staying. So we got there, and here's what occurred. The last tour had just started. They end earlier in the day. I was like, no way. You know, I was kind of bummed. But how bummed can you be when Big Ben's over here, Parliament, St. James Park, and Buckingham Palace? I'm like, okay, so we'll do something else. But this lady comes up to me and she's like, you know, were you going to do that tour? And I said, yeah. She's like, well, you know what's happening in like less than an hour? She said, they hold a service there. And it's very like worship oriented. And I'm like, oh, and Brad's looking at me. I don't know, but when we were there, it was 92 to 96 every day in full sun. Like our taxi driver said, you just experienced summer in London because now it's going to turn cold and rain. I'm like, bring it. I love that. I can do that. Just keep hydrated. And so as we were there and she said, and Brad's looking at me. Now remember, it's like 94 full sun. And she's like, it's about 45 minutes. And he said to me, and he was good. I mean, I don't want to like misrepresent. He's like, so did you want to do that? I'm like, yes, I do. And so I kept saying the whole time, shade is so underrated. So there was a little bit of, so I said, let's get in line because the line was already forming. Long story short, we went in. It was amazing. When you talk about typology, it was high liturgy. You know, if you know what it, we were, okay, and I have to tell you this, I almost got him kicked out because I said, get some pictures. And so he's like taking pictures. All of a sudden, security comes up. He's like, sir, are you taking pictures? He's like, yeah. He's like, that's not allowed. He looks at me. I'm like, yeah, it's okay. It's going to be okay. They didn't confiscate his phone, but we were in there. I mean, amazing. All the stuff you see on TV that we see if you watch, like even recently, the Queen's funeral, we were right there. And so we had this amazing experience in this very cosmopolitan city. Again, location, typology. And it was where the choir came in their full garb. And they walked with, I call it a scepter. They would so like be looking at me because I don't know the terminology, right? But they came in with these very gold, ornate scepters. And the reverends, the priests, they use all kinds of different names. Deans, they have all these different layers that are represented at Westminster. And they walked up to that stage area, stained glass behind it. I mean, amazing. And we sat. So here's the carved, like if you, I'm looking at Jesse and Micah right there and then me. The choir are in carved out wood pews, you know, like this. And then another side. And as the reverend, priest, dean would say something, they would sing in response. And Brad and I got to sit in the two chairs right here. I'm looking at the person speaking, singing, the choir's over here, and the pipe organ's right there playing. It was amazing. And I thought, and I'm just going to be honest, I know you're like, okay, so much for your little like highlight. But I thought to myself, in the middle of a crazy cosmopolitan city, there is something that, regardless if that's my form of worship, people were coming in who were tourists, just coming in. Some maybe to get out of the sun, I don't know. But they were getting, I mean, it was just so beautiful, so Jesus-oriented. And I thought, this is amazing that as we think about our time and space, for me, I was looking at from, really that was like May 25, 26, to this week, which is June 14th, we have moved, meaning Brad and I, and you to a certain extent, as we travel together, I have been moving in patterns where the typology of churches has been really amazing to me. So I'm sitting that week of June 25, 26, in this historic, beautiful, right, abbey, listening to high praise with a liturgy that I've really never been a part of, experiencing Jesus there. And then I contrast that because you're like, where's your guy? Well, here's where my guy's at today. He's in Pontiac. He's celebrating with a church, Dustin and Colette. You see them there on the next slide. They have been with us before to represent their church. They have no permanent structure. I thought, what a juxtaposition, right? What contrast. As we move from the last week in May to sitting in Westminster Abbey to moving into Pontiac, Michigan today. He's preaching two services there because their small facility cannot hold. They're running over 100 now. They have asked, when I said to Dustin, what do you want us to pray about? Because there's a lot of needs in Pontiac. It's a very urban area. And we know what that means, where the automotive industry has waned, right? And where you have displaced workers and now high crime and all kinds of issues. And the cool thing is, can I share this with you? Because you guys are such a part of this. Your finances have moved in ways that have been amazing. We have gone and done some different projects that they've needed. And the cool thing is, you know, Dustin came up from the streets of Pontiac through John Gunn's ministry called The Power Company. And some of you support that and know what that ministry is. They now have two locations, Pontiac and Detroit. And as I look at this and say, how amazing is God with typology and location? Seriously, I'm not trying to make that contrived. I think that's amazing to take a cosmopolitan city like London and have this high praise going on and a Jesus-centered element in the middle of all the hustle and bustle in an edifice that's been around for centuries, right? And then we go and we're a part of, because you're a part of this today, just as you have your pastor being sent out to encourage a man and his wife and children to keep speaking Jesus despite no building, despite the rubble, despite all the things in their location that would say, go somewhere else. They say, here we are. And I just, as I think about that today, And as I think about, remember I put a bubble over here because we're getting back. Now we're creating this one over here. And as I think about this, and I think about how good God is, that over the last 3.5 weeks, we have experienced and are experiencing different kinds of typology, churches that God uses, churches that Jesus speaks through. And as we believe with Pontiac, there'll be opportunities there. Dustin and Colette and I are talking to go and do more. But at this point in time, can I just tell you, Dustin said, please pray for a permanent building. And those of you that remember, if you were back with us, Brighton AG, for the first 5 years, we were in almost 5.5 rented facilities. So I know what that means. He doesn't even have to unpack that for me. It usually means chairs have to be set up, sound systems have to be set up, all kinds of things have to be done. And a lot of times you can't get in before, so you do it day of. And then it all has to be taken down. And so you spend a lot of time on tear and set up and tear down versus all your ministry dreams and visions. And that's challenging. I understand that. Because for 5 and 5.5 years, God was faithful and helped us in this location of Brighton. But it really looks like when we first got, you remember the first phase, those of you that don't, there's a reason there's a big seam in this wall. This is phase one. And the stage went out like this, and we were here. And we loved on Jesus. And I remember the first month thinking, there is no sound system to be torn down. There are no chairs to be stacked. There's just ministry to be had. And that's what I'm praying, and that's what Dustin's asking you to pray, that Pontiac will have that in the location, and their typology, while urban, will not be defined by what is around them, but they will begin to bring life to that area in new ways. Amen?
Amen.
Amen. And now I'm going to go to, because I said there were four, last weekend, typology, location. A team from this church went to Onaway, Michigan to partner with Awaken Church. We did that at the request of Katie and Eric Morrell, who said, we have started a foster care ministry. We're foster adoptive parents. It's so challenging because it's typology, rural. And so resources are limited. It's hard to get partners. We're all spread out. And if you doubt that, you know what's so interesting to me when I go up there? Pastor Alex and Nicole, they love it up there. I say, that's awesome. They're doing amazing things. They've been there 3 years, raising their kids. And people are showing me, Katie and Eric, who we partnered with, that they're on 25 acres, about 20 minutes away from Awaken Church in Onaway. And they're showing me on their phone. Remember, typology, location, right? They're showing me on their phone while they're eating dinner, a bear at their window. And I'm like, what is this? They're like, every night. I'm like, that's crazy. Then I got another lady showing me on her phone, I guess we call them mountain lions. I know we say they don't exist in the lower part of Michigan, but they're there. And she showed me these like cougars, mountain lions, whatever we call them, in her yard. And I'm like, you people are crazy. You know, that's crazy. I'm like thinking deer, raccoons, a few bunnies, right? It's just so cool. And I'm sharing my personal experience because some of you went, but all of you are with us as we continue to empower these teams. As we continue to say yes, right? To sit in Westminster, that was so cool. But it really jogged me because the contrast that came very quickly is then to think, okay, Brad's going to Pontiac, because that didn't just happen. We started interacting with Dustin and Colette and just some different things as he was going. And then we're in Onaway and seeing a foster care ministry. And can I just tell you to pray when you think of these things? And we're going to end the service a certain way. That after we left, Katie emailed me and she said, Rhonda, there were like 25 to 30 people that came for the training on a Friday night. Like how to be trauma-informed, trauma-trained, trauma-response, and how to start a foster care ministry. And then we had 10 families at the event, which you may say, that's not many. That's huge. Okay, they had no connectivity with those families. 10 families. We had people, Oakland County gave us clothes from their clothing closet. We had at one point, I had to step out. I had this clothing closet all set up. There were so many of the moms and kids shopping. You know, it's a narrow corridor. I just stepped out. I said, go for it. You know, I was trying to be like Amy in the clothing closet. She helps us here. Okay, here's a bag and here's this. I'm just like, they were coming like in mass. I'm like, you got it. You can just have the bags and go. It was so cool. But as I think about, we're defining this. I want you to see yourself as a part of this because I'm going to go back to what I was going to say. Katie emailed me and she said there were two people there from the community that are involved with our schools. And she said, they want me, and Katie's up on stuff. I mean, so it wouldn't just be like rogue. She's like, they want me to come and trauma train the teachers of this elementary school. Hello. Hello. Okay. And she's like, do you think I could maybe borrow some of your materials? I said, here's the deal. I'm hitting send. You can have all my slides. You can have all my material. She's like, we want to use these calming cards that some of you use. Like, we'll use them in BBS for our kids that come from hard places and all the other activities. Here, I said to Carrie Salee, who's with our littles right now, I said, Carrie, I sent her the email. She responds, Katie, here's every website we use. Do you know how beautiful that is? As we move in where God has placed us. Now, here's what I'm saying. In what I think is so beautiful in each of these settings I've just presented is that nobody's like, oh, I got to get. They're saying, I'm in it to win it. I'm cosmopolitan, okay? High liturgy. I'm urban. I'm rural. And now I move to, how many of you have seen this next picture? Do you know what that is? That's us. That's the new. Now, we've shown this on a couple of Wednesday nights in a business meeting. That's the new entrance to Brighton AG. It's going to be in the middle here. All those offices are gone. You have the nurseries coming out behind a door. You have all the offices going over here because all that's opened up. And I say, that's so cool. And guess what we are? We're suburban, right? We're suburban. And so what I think is so amazing is that as we embrace the locations where God has placed us, that there's typology that happens and location that happens. We do ministry different. But as we're loving on Jesus and coming together, I think it's an amazing thing to move in ways where there's partnership, sharing of resources, encouraging, equipping, and sometimes just taking in. And sometimes just allowing the Lord to speak to us as his church. And so while John received letters, we receive today those same letters. So let's go back. I'm going to like this. Okay, so that's going up there. If that's a screen, I call it bubble because we used to web a lot and do mapping. If I bring this screen back in, remember what we talked about. AG&C, Patmos, right off the coast, kind of an oblong shape here. I'm pulling that screen over. Trade route, typology, that there were different types of churches. And I hope you got that from me presenting those, including Brighton AG, four churches, that all of us are doing it differently, yet same. Different types of ministry, different ways to do it, but sameness, commonality, presenting the name of Jesus in meeting the needs of community. You know, because Westminster, let me just tell you why you might think that's fluff. They saw an opportunity that there were people like us that would miss a tour. You get what's happening there, don't you? They're using what they have. They saw an opportunity to do a community service, and it's not for their own people. It's only for tourists. And they know people are coming to that city from all over the world. Truth. And they open their doors and do a service, again, only if you're a visitor, to present Jesus using what they use, which is high liturgy. You have Pontiac saying, we don't have a building, but we're going to present Jesus in two services in the small space that we can get, believing for. You have Onaway saying, we're going to start a foster care ministry while resources are totally like, where are they? And we're so spread out. And yet they're saying, we're in it. I use that phrase all the time. To win it. Cliche, I know. And then you have Brighton AG saying, we're going to revamp and repurpose this entire upper level for the next generation for ministry purposes that God can use. And then, of course, we're partnering with all of those churches that I just presented. And these churches that we see here, the seven, as I've already said, as we've brought that screen back in front of us, they have received, I called it love letters on purpose. What I think is so interesting is, like, when I work with my kids, I had, like, a scenario of this just recently, and I had to say, you know, love doesn't always look like kisses, hugs. Sometimes it looks like correction. Sometimes it looks like things that we don't like. And for these churches, for the majority of them, that's what it looked like. Their love letters look like who Christ was, and then the good stuff, the step it up stuff, get rid of it stuff. Here's kind of the consequence stuff. But in the midst of these letters that John penned, that Jesus spoke to him, there's so many cool pieces that are so applicable to us today. And as I said, I'm not exhaustive with this, but I'm going to move into the first four. So we're going to travel back in time. We're going to remind ourselves that John, I mean, think about that. You're the last man standing. You're exiled to an island, and yet there is something so spiritual that happens. And can I speak to some of you? If you feel like you're the last man standing, that's not gender specific. You know, it's mankind, right? When I'm saying that. If you feel like you're the last man standing, if you feel like in some layer of your life you've been exiled, you know what I mean? It just feels like you're alone. There's nobody there for you. Can I just tell you, Jesus still speaks. And what's amazing is many times that's when he speaks the loudest if we will position ourselves to hear from him. And so as we continue to explore this, I want to do two more things. Before we get into our first church, which is Ephesus, I want to talk about a vocab term, because this would really kind of mirror on that next screen what is happening in Pontiac. I did this on purpose. I put a very old established church because the definition of this word, it's ecclesia, is, you can see it's the called out ones. It's summoned for a person living communities. Now, there's a reason why this word was used in the New Testament, ecclesia. Is because so many times in these seven cities, there weren't these beautiful edifices. They couldn't even meet like Pontiac's meeting in small spaces. They had to meet in their homes, and they had to meet in parks, and they had to meet in places that they could. Because these cities were not receptive. It's not like Jesus died, rose again, went to heaven, and the church went crazy. And, you know, we know that there was explosion and there was growth patterns, but it was at great personal expense. And these cities that we're going to talk about did not say, hey, come on. They were like, we don't want that. That's heresy. There was total opposition to what the apostles and what the early church were endeavoring to do. Hence, everyone except John is with us no more, right? And so I don't want you to think in terms of when you see that, you know, carrier route we're talking about. There's a reason John is exiled, because it's antagonistic to who Jesus is, and especially the culture. So there weren't beautiful buildings like this one where most likely, I love this, when the bells toll, right, and chime. It's such a pretty sound. None of that was happening for the early church. They were making it. They were in hard places, and they were blowing it at times as well, just like us, just like us. And yet Jesus cares enough to speak directly to them through John, through letters, personal understanding that they were called out from the culture, understanding there was a cost associated, that there was purpose that was being input into their lives. And they were living communities most of the time outside the four walls of a building. And so that's another piece of common framework as we build out that first web, screen, whatever word you like. And as I think about that, then there's another piece that I want to use. In these seven letters, there was a recipe. So when there's this spoken word through the letter format that John is writing, I found this interesting. And again, that's why I told you it's not exhaustive. This is like a study that I've done, okay? In this study that I've been doing of the churches, these seven, I've talked about typology and location. I've talked about this courier or almost mail route that is connected with 300 miles. And due to dissemination, that these letters would go farther than those seven churches, and that there would be that things would resonate with other churches because there were churches like them, right? We're all together. Here's another component. I added the vocab word ecclesia to help us understand. Now I'm adding, here is a recipe. If I were doing this in a language arts kind of thing, I would say, but I took this from a source, so I stuck with what they had to give them credit for it. But they called it a recipe for churches. So in the letters that John is writing, this is followed in every single letter to the seven churches. There is a description. Jesus describes himself, and what I love, it's not generic. He makes it super personal, and he goes to where they are. So the time I spent on saying, like, the type, like, this is a cosmopolitan church, this is an urban church, this is rural, this is suburban, there's a reason, because it's part of what he does in these letters. He actually moves into the spaces where they live. He uses landmarks, he uses references, he uses idioms. Do you remember your language arts? What an idiom? Up a creek without a paddle. Okay? He uses things like that that are specific to where they live, that they get it immediately and outsiders wouldn't. You know, you see, how many of you have seen it all? What are their names? Josh and Jace from the UK that came to Michigan. Have any of you seen that on Facebook? Okay. They have done some crazy stuff. And so they do this, like, hey, in the UK, we say this. In Michigan, you say this. It's quite funny to watch, okay? And so that's what Jesus does, this whole thing. He's saying, here's the language you would use here. Here's how you make your money. Here's the industry that exists. And so it's super cool. You'll have to do more of a deep dive of that. But it's really, really cool. And so as we look at, he puts a description of himself, not in a generic way, in a really specific, intentional way to each church that's different. He tells them he knows them because he reads, well, the old phrase, he reads their mail. He diagnoses the problem, and he has a prescription and a promise. And this follows this format to every single letter of the seven churches. And as I've already said, he talks about landmarks, references, economics, idioms. I already hit that. And as we move towards this first church, the Church of Ephesus, you'll see the scripture on the screen, and we'll read parts of it. There are the words for him who holds the seven stars in his right hand. Now, this is the first church. That's the seven stars, right? The church. He's saying, all of this is mine. There's a reason why he starts with Ephesus. Ephesus is the oldest church at this time. They say, they estimate it's about 40 years old. Brighton AG under Brad, Trask, Rhonda, okay, we're approaching 34. So what's happening here is he's telling them, you know, and you'll have to read it and dissect it because there's more that goes along with this. But as he's talking about those seven stars, he's saying, I'm holding them. Because there's a little bit of something happening in Ephesus where they think they're kind of self-sufficient. You know, that happens. They've become very strong. They've become very effective. And as in that, it also then, I'm going to go down to the bottom. Remember what I said? He describes himself. There's a reason he says, I hold the seven, right? In my hand, like for my purposes, for my design, you've been created. And you know the old phrase, like maybe your grandparents used with you, you're too big for your britches. Okay, if you're old enough, you know that one. Like, that's what he's kind of saying to them. And as we move throughout, I'm going to jump to the bottom because you can see he gives them props. He says, here's what I know about you. Man, you are doctrinally precise. You have endurance, discernment, hard work. You are turning 40 years old as a congregation. You're amazing. However, I still hold the churches. My power is what you need, right? When we talk about this, and what goes on here is he says, and I'm going to the bottom, yet I hold this against you. This is a diagnosis. And he talks about that they have forsaken their first love. I talked about this just briefly, I think last Sunday when I did the transitional time, because this is so in my spirit, because this resonates with me somewhat. Because the older you get as a church and movement patterns, I mean, we're not like Brightmore, which Brad and I both attended, his dad pastored, they're turning 100 this fall. That's amazing. Okay. You know, we're moving towards 34. I feel like that's amazing. Right. But there's also something that happens many times to people in churches. The longer we go, the more self-sufficient we go, and we rely on our doctrinal precision. We rely on, yep, we got that. Yep, we checked that box. Yep, we're hard workers. We'll take care of it. And we forget he holds us in his hands. And he's our power source. And he's the one who speaks. And the winds and the waves, they obey, right? He's the one who comes alongside. And what he says to Ephesus is, you've forsaken your first love. And as I said about in the transitional time, I shared a little bit of this, either last week or the week before. It's interesting when you study the original language, it's not like how you lose your keys, like you didn't mean to. He uses the word in the Greek, you've left your first love, and it's been intentional and deliberate because you trust yourselves, your structures and systems. And I think that speaks, especially, and I started with Ephesus. It's one that most people start with, but I did it because I want to speak that to my life, to your life, to our lives. Man, the older we get, let us still maintain. And what does he say? The first love. Go back, he says, repent and do the things you did at first. And that's when it was just all out of love. Structure's good. You know me. Those of you that work with me, I like some structure. But I want the Holy Spirit to breathe in. I want to be, this is my phrase, willing to be surprised at what God wants to do after I submit it back to him. And I think the Ephesians, based on study, had stopped submitting it back to him. And can I just, I get where that can happen. And yet we, Brighton AG, must be so intentional that we understand he holds the seven stars. And we don't leave intentionally, deliberately, our first love of him and substitute anything else. It's an additional, because every church has a personality. And God does all kinds of things with our strengths as they're submitted to him. But as we look at this first church, I want you to think about, I'm just asking you, because I already asked myself. So if I bring a new screen that says application of, is there any place in your life that you have substituted your own strengths, your own knowledge, your own abilities, and you've stopped remembering he holds the seven stars? Because we can get into that. We can check boxes, done, done, done. And ministry can do that. And so many times on our jobs and in our schools and in community service, we're rewarded because we've checked the boxes well and we've done it. In spiritual matters, and I pray that this carries over into those places too, meaning who we are as Jesus followers, but so many times we can forget, and that's what Ephesus did. And they brought in the checking of boxes, yep, 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 for time spent with him, hearts that were bent towards him, hearing his voice afresh and anew, willing to be surprised if he wanted to operate outside their box. I am not saying go rogue. I'm not saying be, you know, sloppy. That's not what I'm saying. They had buttoned it down to the point where they weren't even hearing him anymore. Does that make sense? And I want to just say to us, I say it to myself first, and I say it to all of us, let us not be in that place. City number two is Smyrna. Smyrna is a place, and we go back to, I love this, what he knows. I'm kind of going, so I had down, if you remember the format for the letters, it said description, what he knows, diagnosis, prescription, and then the promise. So when I look at Smyrna, one of the seven churches, it says, these are the words of him who is the first and last, who died and came to life again. Now, this is so interesting. The word Smyrna comes from the word myrrh, which is a burial spice, right? We know Jesus received gold, frankincense, myrrh. And so this root of Smyrna is rooted in myrrh because it was mined here. It was from here. And what's interesting is this city has a lot of history with things who are, they're charred over. Like they're up, they're down, they're up, they're down. Now they're effective in their trade guilds and their economics, but they had a lot of hardships within the city itself of being attacked and different things happening and tragedies. And so it's really interesting that their name is connoted, and myrrh is from here, that with the burial of, because they had several times throughout history where things just went like catastrophes, okay? Catastrophes. And as we look at Smyrna and we think about when he talks about, and I thought this was so interesting, when he introduces himself, remember, he has a unique introduction of himself to each church. What does he say? Who died and came to life again. When I studied this, people, the commentators and different people, theologians are like, that is so specific because this city has died basically and come to life multiple times. And then the name originates with myrrh, which is a burial spice. And I'm like, this is kind of crazy. But Jesus knows us so well, so specifically, he's not going to fool around and try and like put a Band-Aid on it and kiss a boo-boo. He's going to say, let's just deal with what it is. I know you have been through things where it feels like you've died and had to come to life. I know you've lost and you've had to rebuild. Understand, I gave my life. I was buried in the ground and resurrected, and I am now yours. For Ephesus, it was a reminder. Who holds the seven stars? Who's in charge of all this stuff? Not you with your 40 years, but me. He doesn't deliver the same message because Smyrna's had some hardship. Smyrna's had challenges. And he reminds Smyrna, I understand. I was killed. I was buried, but I am resurrected and I am your resource. And I get how hard it is. I get the tragedies you've been through. And when I just studied this more and more, I was like, this is so cool. Because again, with a city that has been dead and had to come to life multiple times, there is no criticism of them. So if I get down to the bottom line, Smyrna doesn't receive criticism, but they do receive a little bit of a push in a direction to say, you know, I understand that the guilds are strong in your city. Typology, location, right? The type. These were tradesmen. And I understand that you're being challenged to eat and compromise meat that has been sacrificed to idols. I understand that there's poverty within you because you're saying no. And Jesus, again, doesn't sugarcoat as he inspires John to write. He says, you are to stay strong. And this is what he says, basically, you're going to have hardship. You've chosen to do the right thing, and it's not going to be easy. And I would say to some of you here today that when compromise knocks at your door, Jesus does not promise that it's all going to be taken care of. He'll take care of you. He's our soul keeper. He's the lover of our soul. But he doesn't say that it's going to be a walk in the park. For Smyrna, he says, like the verse says, in this world you will have trouble. And he's saying to Smyrna, I see you. I see you're not eating that meat that's been sacrificed to idols. I understand the sacrifices you're making. But he does say to them, look at the bottom there, be faithful, even to the point of death. Because there's stuff happening. If I were to dissect this and disaggregate a little bit more, the Jews in this area were weaponizing their faith, much like they did against Jesus. You know, the Jews weaponized their faith to get Jesus into a mock trial that defied all the rules of the culture, and he was crucified. And what's happening in Smyrna is basically the same. There are Jews who are weaponizing their faith to attack the Christians, the Jesus followers. And then you have the trade guilds. So it's almost like they have bookends coming, but it's squeezing them to a place that's super uncomfortable. But he says, I will give you a crown of life. And what I thought was interesting is here is when you study this, it's a crown of victory, not a crown of an emperor. And they would have known the difference. See, the emperor, right? The certain crown the emperor wore. They would understand in the Greek that they were being promised a crown of life. Probably afterlife, you understand, if they would be faithful. That's some hard news. But encouraging in this realm that he sees us. And so I say, you know, for us in the States, that's a hard word. But I think for the Christians that are in different places, martyrdom is higher now than it's ever been, at least recorded. When you look at the news and you see the Christians that are being martyred on the continent of Africa, typology, location. But I would say to us, be aware and determine now. When compromise comes knocking at your door, don't even open, but let it remain shut so that we finish strong and receive that crown of life. Third church, Pergamum. As we move into this city, it's the political capital of the Roman Empire. It's like HQ, all right? You have imperial cult worship at the highest levels. So you have emperors that have declared themselves God. You have worship of that happening. You have libraries, centers. You have extensive learning happening. You have here what I think, look at Jesus introducing himself. These are the words to him who has the sharp double-edged sword. Let me tell you what that means. In this highly political city, executions happened regularly of people who didn't measure up and or opposed, because it's Roman headquarters HQ, right? Okay. And so executions with swords were commonplace. What does Jesus say? But they were a single-edged blade. You have to study it. Jesus says, I'm a sharp double-edged. See, he's got this individual message. It's so cool. He knows exactly what's happening there. And he says, I know they got swords. I know what's happening. I know there's persecution. But I'm this sword. And you need to remember that. And the messaging here is so specific that when this church received this letter from John, they'd have been like, oh my word. Like, this is so spot on. This is so us. And it says, look here, where Satan has his throne. I know where you live. He's saying what's happening here under the Roman Empire in this headquarters city is satanic. It's not of him. And he gets it. He knows that there's been the martyrdom of Antipas. He knows that they've lost a significant leader. He's understanding, but he then challenges them, because in this very public culture, where when you study it, feasts and celebrations and parades happened on a regular basis, everything was very public. He's saying, you need to get in your private place with me, because you are getting to the place where you want the accolades in a public way, like the city wants them. And the Roman Empire wants them. And I'm not this big parade guy, big all these different celebrations guy. I'm Jesus, who wants you on an intimate level, personal level. And that's why he goes to where he says to them, to him who overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna. Now, I know I've had ellipsis in there. You're going to have to do more with that. But what we're talking about here is they had come up with ways. We call them workarounds. They know what they were supposed to do, and they were working around the system, meaning the good system that Jesus had asked them to follow, what they knew to be true, to give a nod to the culture. And I think if we're all honest, maybe there's some in here, I'll speak for myself. I've been guilty of that. You're like, I don't know if I really, do I really want? So I'll just give a nod. You know what that means. You kind of lean into it. But you know, you're not really for it, but you'll just, you don't want to really make a deal. And that's kind of what was happening here. They were leaning into the feast. They were leaning into the celebrations. And they were beginning to emulate a little bit of that in the church. Even following, you can read there, I know you already have, some practices. And if you know Balaam, if you know your word, you know that's Old Testament practices that are totally anti-God, totally demonic. And they had allowed that to creep in. And he says to them, get rid of the public stuff. Get rid of the festivals. Get rid of the feasts. Get rid of all the things that look like pomp and circumstance. And go back to a place, because the hidden manna, again, Old Testament reference. See, he's specific. They were following an Old Testament God. You see how crazy this is? It's so cool when you study it. Meaning, allowing the city was, Balaam. But they were leaning in, these early Christians, to that. Just like the Israelites fell victim to, right? And it took them farther than they ever wanted to go, bigger prices than they ever wanted to pay in the Old Testament. And he's saying, you're doing the same. There's repetition of pattern here. But what you need to desire the manna. Again, if you know your Old Testament, he dropped manna for them and provided. And he talks about, as we make application to ourselves, that it's time, manna represents time spent with him, his provision, his nourishment, not the accolades of men, not awards. And again, if you get awards, it's great, right? Do your best. Let God use you. But understand, it's in the secret private place with the manna from his throne room, where we are undergirded, where we are in a place where we can be strong amidst all the stuff. And when we start to lean, we go, oh, no. When we start to compromise, because Balaam can represent all kinds of past patterns in our lives, things that God brought us out of, things that God has turned around. And see, that's what Balaam represents. It's moving back to, for these New Testament Christians, moving back into patterns that were Old Testament that they knew were wrong. And we can do that in our own lives. We can move back into things that God brought us out of, and we can substitute the public, the acclaim, for the personal application, private time with Him, where He's our resource, and where He, in that secret place, speaks to us. Number four, we're going to wrap it up soon. We have Thyatira. These are the words of the Son of God. Again, personal message of who Jesus is, whose eyes are like blazing fire and whose feet are like burnished brass. Okay, so cool, because this community, a mining community, these people, when He gave this message, they know. And their emperor there proclaimed Himself the Sun God. He proclaimed Himself the brightest. He proclaimed all kinds of things about Himself. And what does Jesus say? He says, oh no, I am blazing. I am hot. And when these people would have seen this, because they're metal tradesmen, they would have known what He's describing is so refined, so perfect. There is nothing that outshines it. And when Jesus speaks to our lives, and there are things that try and set themselves up in our lives, like this emperor, like a god, we say, oh no, I serve one. And Pastor Brad led in those refrains. There's no other name like Jesus. He has no equal, no rival. And He has no problem letting you know that. Not because He's arrogant and pompous, but because He knows that He came, He lived, He died for you, for me, for the world, to set us free. We are not to worship men, but we are to worship Him, the one true God. Yeah, that's good. Okay, so as we move through this message that starts off, Thyatira gets it like that. And here we have, again, elements that speak to this church, their location, typology, and it moves again. The trade guild's very big. And while that's repetitious, it was different in this city. Because guess where these trade guilds would hold their meetings? In the temples. So these early Christians had to decide very quickly, because in those temples, there was worship that it was sexual in orientation. It was just really, really crass. And these early Christians had to decide, because while we go, oh yeah, you couldn't do that. Well, here's the deal. It's their livelihood. It's how they make their money. It's what they do. And see, the thing is, if they stopped going or didn't go, it's not, remember when I went back to the first part and I said, it's not like these churches are being welcomed. Remember the word ecclesia? I mean, they're meeting outside of buildings and wherever they can. And so these guilds would be like, sorry, you're not one of us. You know, and they were ostracized. They were kept out. And then people wouldn't do business with them. So this is really tricky. And if you've ever felt ostracized, I mean, it goes beyond a feeling. It starts to have consequences and ramifications that are really challenging. And this is what Thyatira was experiencing. It wasn't optional. It was mandatory. Meetings were held in these temples. And what was beginning to happen in Thyatira, or had happened, is they started to, and this applies to, I think, our culture, they started to compartmentalize. I can go to the meeting and eat the stuff and maybe even do, but it's not really who I am. You know, we see this on social media. People say and do things, they're like, well, that's just this. No, that's who you are. That's who I am. Okay? That's who we are, because we're holistic beings. And what began to happen is high levels of compartmentalization, and the church adopted that thought pattern. We have to do this in order for people to make a living. Now, I've never been there, but I'm just going to say this is what Jesus said through John the Revelator. I've never been so ostracized that I couldn't make a living. So I give you that. I really do. But again, I'm not saying this. These are my opinions. I'm saying this is what the letter says. Jesus inspired John to write the letter. And so as we move through this, what begins to happen is theological compromise. They begin to rewrite their belief systems and include that it's okay. Now think if someone comes in and they don't know who Jesus is in this church. And they're looking to be, again, we talked about this, a new way of life, right? And all of a sudden they're like, well, so I can still go to the temple eat the sacrifices, and if there's like sexual stuff going on or whatever, you know, and this is, everyone's old enough to hear that. I mean, that's what was happening. It's okay. Can you imagine the confusion? Well, I'm already doing that, so how is this different? And so it got really tricky for the church at Thyatira, because as they allowed that compromise to come in, the Lord called them out. And he said, these things have to change. But look what he says. And I am he who searches the hearts and minds. What is he saying? I know you're compartmentalizing. You think you're just putting it here, here, and here, you know, and doing these check boxes and so forth. He says, but I see your hearts and your minds, and they're being affected. And he says, but I will repay each of you according to your deeds. Hold on until I come. He always gives that promise. And as the worship team comes back, I think about, as we get ready to close, and I know I've taken you on a little journey today, literally and figuratively, with location typology and these different places that we've talked about partnerships with and the letters that John has penned. But I want to take you to this last slide, because at the end of each letter, and we just covered four, go ahead and go to the next slide, that it says, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. And my prayer is today that we individually and as a church are hearing what the Spirit says. To Ephesus, he said, you've left your first love. You've intentionally said, I got this. You've forgotten I hold the stars and you're one of and you need me. And he says, but remember, repent, and redo. He says to Smyrna, I know there's hardships. I know that you're standing strong in the face of adversity, so I've got nothing to say except cheer you on, because there is a crown of life and it may cost you your life. To Pergamum, he says, man, you have substituted public acknowledgement and parades and feasts for me. I want personal intimacy. I want to feed you manna from my throne room, but you're more interested in a banquet where your name is said out loud. Stop the workarounds and return to me. To Thyatira, he says, I burn so brightly that Sun Emperor may require things of you, but remember who I am. And don't let shiny objects ever replace me. Don't be distracted. Don't compromise. Don't go into those temples and eat those meats. You maintain your integrity.